Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
So today for Goals Question Time, I've got the pleasure of being joined by old friend Jay Ryman, who's partner at Propel Ventures, which is BBVA's bank corporate venture fund. Hi, Jay.
Hey, Andrew. Good to be here.
Thanks very much for joining us. So, Jay, could you kick off first by giving us a brief introduction to yourself? Because I know you've got quite a history in the corporate venturing space.
Yeah. Like I said, good to be here. My new role as of February 1st is a managing partner at Propel Venture Partners, which is an independent venture fund with a sole LP being BBVA, a very large Spanish financial institution. We just started this fund February 1st. We previously were known as BBVA Ventures.
Uh-huh. Great.
Just for background for myself, I've been in the corporate venture capital business for approximately 15, 16 years. Started my career in financial services as a banker, been in consulting, been in a startup, been with large corporations. Where I started in corporate venture was with Visa, the card association, back in 2000, and got a taste for it. And I've been for 4 years with BBVA and then just recently spun out into Propel.
Great. So could you give us some insights then, you know, why you've moved to a general partner, LP partner sort of type structure now within BBVA?
Yeah, I think we recognize the competitiveness of getting into great investments is really hard in a traditional corporate venture structure where you have a investment decision body that is usually made up of executives of an organization, where you oftentimes the principals that are responsible for the business don't really have any skin in the game themselves, meaning they're not putting any of their own money. And oftentimes there isn't much of a incentive tied to performance of those investments. Mm-hmm. And this may sound all like we're really just trying to find great financial investments. While that is absolutely true, we think that having a very strong financial focus is the only way that we can survive long term, that we're going to have the best possible strategic returns for the investor, meaning BBVA. Mm-hmm. So we've restructured ourselves to be a much more attractive investor for the entrepreneurs and for the other investors. We think it's going to make, and we've already seen just in the last 60 days that it's making a difference in the types of deals that we have access to, the level of engagement we can get with other investors. We've done really good, I think. I'm usually pretty critical of ourselves, but I still think we suffer for some adverse selection where there's some investors that are out there as well as entrepreneurs that are reluctant to take some corporate investment money. And we can get into the whys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I agree. I think we see that on the GCV Academy, that it's so important to understand that alignment between the objectives of your corporate fund and the other investors and the startup and that as well, and having a separate GPLP certainly suits a number of organizations. It doesn't suit others sometimes, but
maybe that comes to the purpose of why we're doing this in the first place, and that's why we think this is a better structure for us. For BBVA, the main rationale for trying to get closer to this ecosystem through investments is because they just want to have high level exposure. It's putting things on their radar, helping executives in the organization better understand what's coming around the corner. It's not intended to be a, I hate to use the word glorified procurement department, or we're really not looking for solutions for the bank that they would implement and have a vendor relationship with, that really doesn't matter. And even as BBVA Ventures, that wasn't something where we had the business unit heads as the investment committee members. It was more from a strategy perspective. We're trying to get intelligence. It's a bit of a different function. If we were looking for things where that we could provide immediate solutions to the bank, I think we probably would just retain the existing structure.
Yes.
Because then we would probably be better aligned with the business objectives. Personally, we thought that was a bit too short-term focused. Those types of relationships can certainly happen with any of our portfolio companies, but it's not the intention of the program. Majority of the companies, all of the companies that we've invested in have had engagement with the bank, and in some cases that engagement's made sense where they're going to commercially do something together. But we try to set expectations appropriately at the beginning.
Okay, no, I think it's an excellent description of that alignment of what your purpose is with the appropriate process. And I certainly see in a number of organizations now where they say they want to be strategic, in inverted commas, and aligned with the business unit, but I often respond and say, well, that sounds like you're more tactical than strategic in terms of what they're doing. So in terms of what's the size of the plan and the investment the size of the fund and the plan for investment?
So a few years ago, we set up a corporate fund that was a dedicated $100 million, U.S. dollars. We invested about half of that, and in the background had been working on this alternative structure in the financial services industry, or more particularly the banking, because BBVA also has a U.S. bank in its holding structure. It requires us to follow a few more regulations that have also caused some friction that I know some of the other my colleagues and other financial-oriented funds from banks also suffer from some of these things. So we were also working on something called an SBIC license, which gets us around the loophole. The new fund that was just announced in February is really 250, which technically consists of the old 100 plus a new 150. The entire team is currently in the U.S. We are in the process of finalizing our rest of world fund, which will most likely be in your neck of the woods, Andrew.
Okay, in Europe, good, yep.
Yep, well, particularly London.
Okay, very good. So you touched on the strategic areas you're interested in. So what types of technologies and new business models are you seeing as an opportunity or a threat to the current sort of financial services business?
Well, I think we stopped using the word disrupt because of just some of the negative connotations of it, and now we're more so using reinvent or reimagine. Right. I think a lot of the startups that are employing new business models or using new technologies, some of them, maybe they truly are trying to disrupt the incumbent industry and take those relationships away from the banks. What we've also seen tremendously that there is some partnership opportunities where they need each other. I think most of the startups really don't want to go out and get a banking license, and they want somebody else to be managing the funds or be the custodian of the financial relationship, and they want to provide a better experience on top or more expanded experience. We, from a technology perspective, the core things that are, of course, changing our industry, first and foremost, surprisingly, is still simply the internet and mobile. And I think most banks already have internet banking and mobile banking, but vastly it's not an excellent experience.
Right.
And you'll see that customers, if you look out on iTunes or the Google Store, Android Store, you'll see that customers are not necessarily very happy with their bank's products. So first, low-hanging fruit. There's a lot to fix in that. Just building better functionality and usability of those basic products. When you get deeper, things like machine learning, big data, or data analytics more in particular, are fundamentally changing how we need to be doing underwriting.
Right.
It's something that the banks have had access to and are just starting to deploy, but you can see that some of the startups are moving much, much faster. Customer acquisition is also a becoming a science.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen new business models such as the marketplaces that are out there. That's probably one of the biggest ones, where there's some disintermediation of right. banks, meaning like some of the lenders, and we've invested in two of them. One is Prosper, and another one called Earnest. Very different kind of customer acquisition, 100% online for these guys, or remote channels versus the incumbent industry primarily is still acquiring customers through the branch networks.
Mm-hmm.
And underwriting processes are oftentimes multiple factors faster than what you see at an incumbent industry practice.
Right. Okay. And technology like blockchain?
Blockchain is still in its infancy. It's gotten, from a technology perspective, if you think about it, the distributed ledger, there's similar technologies that you can set up that you're seeing now where we're seeing industry is starting to explore it. I'm hopeful about it. I think we still have a lot of work to do to try to get the all banking organizations to better understand what it is. There's lots of innovation teams that are working on it, but what I haven't seen yet is real deployments.
Yeah.
Some of the challenge is for banks on blockchain is that I think the banking organizations are still worried about the regulators and how blockchain is being deployed, and to the extent that it enables money transfers where it puts the bank at risk. But amazing potential technology.
Yeah. So one, you're keeping an eye on, let's say, for that strategic insight sort of perspective, I guess.
Yeah, from an investment perspective as well as from BBVA usage perspective, they've got a handful of initiatives that they're working on.
Good.
Related to blockchain.
Good. So so people are so central to corporate venture units. Can you give us a bit of an insight to the people now that are in Propel Ventures?
Yeah, I would say that it has gotten even more important now at Propel, which is a part of it is truly a partnership, like a marriage. For us, there's three partners. So I was the original partner that started the BBVA Ventures and have been working on this. In about my second year, I brought in an old colleague, Tom Whitaker, who he and I had worked together at Visa. To help me build the practice. He was most recently at the Hartford Ventures, restarting
right.
that venture program over at the Hartford. We most recently brought in a guy with a much different profile, which was vastly needed, a guy named Ryan Gilbert, also is the third general partner. And he comes more as an entrepreneur. He left his most recent startup after they sold part of it. And handed over the reins to one of his colleagues,
mm-hmm.
his general manager, to run the rest of the company. He remains chairman, but he comes with a different perspective of being an entrepreneur multiple times, also being an angel investor in the market, helping us understand and help our customer, meaning the entrepreneur, much better.
Mm-hmm.
It's a much different practice. We're also because of the LPGP relationship, now we're able to attract, I think, a little bit of a different quality of talent, because we have a carried interest program that we're able to incent people long term. Whereas before, in a salary and bonus perspective, while it was good, I think there's the entrepreneurial types aren't going to necessarily be satisfied with that kind of structure.
And I think retaining people for the time it needs to be able to get the fund to maturity becomes a big issue within normal corporate structures, unless people really love and live the venturing sort of type way, and that can go so far.
Right, right on, Andrew. The old structure, we had long term corporate incentives, they weren't something like the 10-year partnership that we just put together for the fund, where no one expects to get rich quick here. Really, when you start modeling this stuff out, carried interest really doesn't come for many, many years.
Yeah.
It's the chance for life-changing kind of success.
Mm-hmm. Good.
If you can get it right.
And how do you work with the people in your LP? That's the core business of BBVA in regard to governance, for validating the investments and connecting then the investment portfolio things with the business units. How does that tend to work?
I think this is something we couldn't have started with. It took some years to build the trust within the BBVA organization.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, we've had some very, very forward-thinking executives at BBVA that we've been working with that enable this to happen. And it goes all the way to the top of the organization. The chairman is probably one of the most visionary guys in banking, who's been out talking about how the financial services industry needs to change. It needs to become more of a technology or a software business and less of a bank. And it's partially his drive, along with the president and now the head of something called New Digital Business, Teppo Pavola, who are driving us to make this as an independent entity. So what used to be an investment committee where we'd have regular meetings to talk about what's going on in the industry, and insights that we're bringing out, as well as approve those investments. They no longer are approving any investments, of course. Now they act like any other limited partner advisory board.
Right.
Of course, they are the majority of that, but they're really, their responsibility is to manage not like an investment committee, but more so as an advisory group. Are we doing the right thing? What kind of insight are we going to have? And leaving the investment decisions to us. But because of the LPGP relationship, they realize that we have skin in the game, that we're, of course, incented to make the right decisions and to be good fiduciaries for the money, which is, of course, primarily their money.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
One more thing about that. The last gentleman, Teppo Pavola, who runs New Digital Businesses, that group is a group responsible for the innovation in digital for the bank. They're responsible for building new businesses, using brand new technologies, and using brand new business models, starting stuff from the ground up. That's a brand new practice, as well as there's an open platform group in there, a digital M&A team. So the venture practice sits within those, and our role in there is to help them strategically with intelligence, with potential partnerships, with potential leads. So that's our primary interface.
Okay, great. Well, that builds on to my next question, which is related to building new technology and new business models. is creating what I describe as sort of innovative new value chains, and that's stringing together these different technologies and these different startups. So can you give us some insights into the key challenges you see that the business is challenged by doing that, and how the customer change sort of occurs, but partly with your LPGP structure, you can partly just pass it off to them and you don't have to worry about it. But I'm sure you're seeing within your own corporate and within other corporates the challenge of how do you string these technologies and startups together. Have you any insights on that?
I think a lot of it comes down to people, meaning that large corporations working with startups, small entities, is a fragile business.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning oftentimes there just isn't motivation to be able to work with a startup because, frankly, in most cases it's not meaningful for the large entity, for the corporation, just because they have quarterly goals where they have revenue numbers that they've got to meet. And oftentimes a startup just really frankly can't help them in the short term meet that quarterly goal. I think you need someone who is willing to take some of those resources away from immediate opportunity and think a little bit longer term.
Right.
And sometimes that just takes either an executive push or a personal relationship to try to get something started. That's the hard part. So I think that really could just come down to people and motivations, how you set those up in the organization. We also have this larger ecosystem that the bank has been working on. So they've been trying to build that out so that they have lots of access. So the BBVA also has something called the Open Talent Contest, which they're trying to engage globally with startups. And really the goal of that is to identify great, and now it's just focused on financial services startups, and there's a prize. There's a cash prize for that. And not only that, but there's also something that the entrepreneurs are valuing, which is a deeper engagement with BBVA, with the executives at BBVA, trying to learn from them, and maybe there's a potential vendor relationship also. That's part of it. Even that open platform that I was mentioning as part of the new digital business group is something where they're trying to build APIs where others can be building on top of BBVA. And that's just a recognition that we can't necessarily build everything, or the BBVA can't necessarily build everything themselves, and instead they want innovation to be built on top of their core systems.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Good. So how do you measure your sort of financial and strategic performance, particularly in the, in your GP structure? Then you've got your financial drivers, and your strategic performance, I guess, will depend on whether your LP decide to invest next time around. How do you specifically manage it?
The financial part's easy. We want to be a fund that the bank will not only invest in, but that would be worthy of external LPs. We may never have external LPs. We may only have BBVA, but we think that unless we have the rigor of being a very successful financial fund, can we survive. From a strategic perspective, what I've seen over the years, and we have tried many things, not just at BBVA, but even at Visa, where we have gotten very technical about measuring strategic value, breaking it down into many categories. If you want to look at top line or bottom line or brand, or even risk, at Visa we looked at risk or even innovation value. We used to measure these things on a very narrow basis, and had a system in place to track quarterly how are we doing against expectations. And we found that while that was interesting, I think our executives at Visa at the time really didn't appreciate it over time. It was. I think what they really came back to is, hey, what have these companies done for us? And oftentimes it's not necessarily the business units, but it's the executives themselves.
Yeah.
How has it enabled them to better manage the business because of new insight or understanding the direction of the industry? Certainly, if there's been key relationships that have been enabled because of a stronger tie to these startups than a vendor relationship, those have also been instrumental. It's these anecdotal stories that combined with financial success have been the key to strategic returns for us.
I agree with that, because I think it's until an organization and the individuals like you sort of gain the trust and respect that those sort of softer measures become more real. And certainly people who come on the academy sort of want some hard numbers or want some hard, well, if I measure this metric, I'm going to show I'm successful. And it's difficult to sort of say, well, no, that's not the case, actually.
I think everyone started. Yeah, when we were using hard metrics, people were starting to question the metrics.
Yes.
And people valued the different components differently than we did, I think they were looking for better underlying stories.
Yeah. Yeah, no, agree. So the great insight, Jay, across overall. Could you illustrate with, you know, describing a couple of examples of recent investments that you've made?
Sure. The practice that we have from what was BB Ventures when we left the organization into Propel has dramatically changed. We in the past were participating in rounds alongside other traditional venture funds, primarily in the B-plus rounds, where it was easier to make these investments because the traditional VCs were willing to allow a corporate to get in, and it wasn't taking ownership position away from them. We didn't find that we were getting enough value from a minority participation. Also, we weren't learning enough. We weren't in enough of a driver's seat to help the companies. So now we're taking much more larger stakes. So we're looking to take 5 to 20% stakes in companies. Still participating alongside traditional VCs. But can go much earlier. And for us, there's a technicality here. Some of those banking regulations made it more challenging to invest early stage because there were some ownership restrictions that we had. With the new fund, we don't have those restrictions anymore, so we can invest much earlier stage. So some of the first three investments out of the fund, of which we've really only announced one, are seed investments. So the very first investment was a company called Drive Motors. This is the one we've announced, which is full stack e-commerce for new car sales.
Okay.
This is a company that surprisingly, you really, other than a Tesla, you can't buy a car online. It's one of those last few things that needs to happen. And they're not working against the dealerships or the traditional manufacturers. They're actually working with them. It's just that the incumbent dealership industry also has not sort of gotten rid of their branch network, because they haven't been able to build out the technology to do the car sales online. Because Tesla didn't have that to start, that's where they started. It's probably one of the second largest financial transactions you have in your life, outside the house. Plus, there's all sorts of other financial services-related things that are going to go on there, like insurance, that we think it's a relevant e-commerce play for us.
Mm-hmm. Good. And do you lead the rounds?
You know, we don't have to. Yeah. So now we're mostly focused on A's and B rounds. The seed investments that we've made right now are not part of our core business. We definitely want to continue to invest with syndicates. So I think what we're finding is a lot of financial services focused startups or technology companies that are going to focus on selling into the financial services industry appreciate having someone who, a firm that comes with that expertise.
Yeah.
So oftentimes we'll complement a traditional fund, a more generalist fund, by bringing in particular relationships or expertise from our personal operating experience that's helpful for the syndicate.
Excellent. Jay, like that, a fantastic overview there of the evolution of a fund from a straight corporate one to a GP LP structure and insights, and that's the financial sort of sector. And it sounds you've been busy over the last number of months in particularly that transition. So what do you do when you're not venturing? What do you get time to relax, and what are your interests?
I have a great family that enables me to get this done, which is where I would prefer to spend much more time than I do. So if all my free time, I'm devoted to trying to spend as much as I can with my wife and my kids.
Good. All right, Jay, thanks very much for your time. Really appreciate you sharing the insights on that with this question time.
Cheers, Andrew. Have a great night.